This episode of Guns Blazing is brought to you by the people at 3Chi. 3Chi is the industry leader in Delta-8 THC products. Delta-8 is a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you an amazing buzz and a great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. So go to 3Chi.com to shop for Delta-8 edibles like cookies and gummies, or to shop for vapes, tinctures, gummies, and oils that can be used to make your own homemade edibles. Use code GUNS21, G-U-N-S, the numbers 21, at checkout to receive 5% off your order. That's code GUNS21 at checkout to receive 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase.
Some years ago, a crack commando comedy unit were given jobs above their pay grade. These men promptly were put on leave and escaped to an underground podcast stockade in an unknown location. Today, still unwanted by big media, they survive as comics of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and you can find them, you can listen to Guns Blazing.
Brother,
Mr. McComas,
how's your last couple days been?
Hey, you know what? I've had some good days. Me and my lady been hanging out, you know, doing things around the house. I had cornhole night Tuesday. You know, it's hard. What does get hard is, you know, I try to keep your scoreholio stats high. But what happens is the format that this league runs is your eight different partners. You play eight games. Ooh. And it just mix and matches you every game. So you got to do your best. And I was, you know, I was 15-2 my first, 14-2 my first 2 weeks. And then this week I lost four, I think. I went 4-4 yesterday as opposed to 7-1. But I'm telling you again, a lot of people there are there very recreational. Not a lot, but there's a handful of people that are, that they don't fucking blood, sweat, and tears cornhole. A lot of people there do, but, you know, there's some other people there just didn't have a good time.
I get it.
But it gets you so frustrated because they're not hitting the board at all. I'm over here four bagging three rounds in a row and we're fucking down eight. I'm like, what else we got to fucking do? But again, you know.
I'm excited for the day that you take the big stage, which at this pace can't be too far down the road.
I think we might go to Delaware this weekend, hit the ACL Regional Open there.
Nice.
It's only a 2-hour ride from the crib. My lady was like, what are we going to do this weekend? Let's go find some cornhole action. And I'm like, okay.
Ooh,
like, volunteer it up like this. Let's go find a tournament.
Here's my arm. Twist it.
Twist that shit. Twist my arm up, baby. Yeah, let's talk, you know what, though, real quick. Let's talk about your, you had a nice little, you put a video up on Twitter.
Yeah. It's gonna
you're
be
done.
A lot of
pretty much done. You're getting, obviously, you get a lot of questions. Todd put up a post on across the board about pretty much giving up stand-up in 2022. So he's got a few shows left, which would be Dayton, Ohio, tomorrow night, Todd.
Yes.
If you're not there. But you're not feeling it no more, huh?
Well, it's not a matter of not feeling it. It's just I don't, like, have time to invest in, like, working on a new hour. So it's like, why continue to do it if I can't work toward a new hour? And you know, if sometime down the road I free up where I can't, it's just that, you know, I want to keep this going. I want to keep 1041 going. I have a lot of true crime shit I got to devote myself to through 2022. There won't be time to improve and build on stand up. And stand up's a game. Like, you don't want to be one of those dead guys that just sits stagnant on your shit. You know,
No.
Not that, you know, I always talk. Always, a lot of my act now is interactive with the crowd, so it is always different. But I feel like since I don't have time to really go at it like I should, it's got to be shelved at minimum, you know. And if maybe it never comes back, I don't know. I still love the performance of it, but, you know, it's getting harder for me to get booked individually. I'm not getting people in seats like I used to. Therefore, it's hard to get booked. It's just a never-ending cycle of,
yes,
man, you got to be really on your shit in this game. It can't be part-time.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah. If you can't, the only way it's part-time is if it's almost like you go places where no one ever sees you, so you can do the same act if you'd like, while you, you know, just if you're just there to, like, you know, just to just for a change of pace. Like if you have a full-time job somewhere else.
Yeah.
A lot of guys do that. I mean, a lot, but that's not what you like. Plus it's not, there's no real, it's, you can't stay driven in that manner. I don't think, unless you just are like in a shitty marriage and you just want to get out of your house, or you live in a shitty life in general, you want to get out of the house.
Right.
So you have, you know, the challenge and the part that drives us, obviously outside of selling tickets and, you know, doing the shows, is the material. Like I get all giddy inside with new bits that start to come alive and a joke that hits out the gate, you know?
Yeah.
When a new bit comes around after 2 months of working it, like that shit gets me pumped.
Well, me too. And that's my thing. Like it's painful to know that I'm not able to devote what I want into it. Like, don't be afraid to come to these shows this year. I'm going to put my heart and soul into them, but
yes,
to continue that course, you know, and get out across the country, like I need to be doing, like, it's going to be tough, man. And I, you know, it's, so it's no big conspiracy thing. It's not like I'm not sick. I'm not going back to Pat's show. Pat doesn't need a fucking sports dummy. He has brilliant minds of brilliant sports minds surrounding him right now. You know, we always still love Pat. We, you know,
of course,
obviously we both still talk to him and all that shit. It's just, I do know him no good. So let's just keep the friendship, you know, don't let me be a shitty content producer.
Well, you know, why would you go back when the same reason why you left is still the same reason? It's still the thing. It's still the thing.
I didn't stop working there and then spend the last year and a half, 2 years just studying sports to be valuable as an asset there. I just kept moving on this and true crime. And true crime's going to be a big part of my shit now. So
I think, as it should be, though, you're a media person, you're a voice, you know, your personality, and you're an amazing detective for 22 years. I mean, I don't know that there's a better place for you to rock and roll in.
Yes. And a lot of questions about this podcast here. Here's the beauty of this podcast. If true crime continues to grow for me and I could be a, you know, significant figure in that world, Sean fucking becomes a pro on the scene of cornhole, and with the $20 chef brand fucking blowing up, what fucking cool meeting in the middle is this place?
Yeah.
Like, we would be in such different worlds, helping each other compliment, because we're best friends. We're always going to do
that.
Like, I fucking will always jump at the fucking chance to come be a producer for $20 chef shit and help with any cornhole stuff I can, and all that stuff. But like, immediate, if this is our meeting ground and we both have that shit going, you know,
to speak about
satisfaction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be cool. And it's, you know, you'll keep doing stand up. You're still fucking crushing it. And, you know, maybe I'll get back there too. I need to get these things accomplished. Yes. 2022 is going to be tough to add stand up. That's it.
Yeah. And they're in you can work, you know, there's so much work available for what you're doing. And you're so good at that. You know, like, I mean, 22 fucking years, you were a plane. I mean, obviously people who know us know, you know, listen a lot, they know that you were a plainclothes cop for less than 2 years before you went straight suit on them and you were out. Like, they, you know, you were born to do this, and you've all, I mean, and I even said it, like, when we're at home, if I lose my keys, I remember losing my shit sometimes, and you would even, like, it was like my keys were a fugitive and you could find my keys. You, anytime we lost something, when I lived with you, you would find it. You could be like, oh, here it is. And I'm like, how the fuck? I've been looking for 2 hours. One time I looked for, like, remember I looked for my keys when somehow they fell in my pocket into the bushes in front of the door. Somehow you found them. Remember when Ari almost ate a whole pack of bunnies?
Yes.
And then,
oh my God.
And then, my little dog was fucking chasing down 9 little bunnies that we didn't know lived out right in front of our apartment entrance. But you had somehow found the key that I would have never found. It just got rained on, and I had to go buy a new one and go through that bullshit.
We just retraced.
It's just in your genetic coding, bro.
Yeah, man. I love a good manhunt. I love a good fucking investigation. I love righting wrong, which I think this documentary does a lot of. So don't be afraid of this going away. All the things you still love. Yeah. Go see Sean when he's on the road. I'll try to pop in on those.
Of course.
You know, maybe do a guest set or something, but for me to headline and it's not,
chase it down, manager, chase the bookings, chase the work. know, chase the marketing for the bookings, the budgets for that. Yeah, you're, you know, the artwork for that, like all the extra stuff, not actually just popping in doing some stand up.
Yeah.
Just to chasing it as the main goal of the of your income.
Running the marketing, dude, these algorithms on social media are fucked up.
It is
like even when you buy the ads now and you boost and you promote, like paid promotion, like it's not getting the numbers it used to. Like for the amount of followers we have, more people should be seeing that shit. And I think it's just this whole business right now of the what happened to Facebook and the servers and all that. Like shit's fucked up right now.
Shout out to my boy James though. He got a job. He just got hired on at Facebook.
What?
Yeah, he's gonna be doing. So he's a sound guy, sound engineer. So he's gonna be doing stuff like that. But you know, you're right. And I'll say this, I put a reel up the other day with my little body and it has this filter with it, your head real big.
I loved it. Yeah,
dude. In 1 hour. Now listen, is it what people wanted to look at? Maybe not. Did it help with the shows? I'll tell you what. I don't know, but I do know this. I got 200,000 views almost on that bitch. In like the first, I got 150,000 views or some shit in the first hour on that on a reel of that dumb shit.
Yeah.
Of my promotion for Dayton. No matter what I do in a promotion for an ad read, I mean, to promote my own shit through the, you know, through Facebook and Instagram ads, I'll never do that.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a fuck off. And it's expensive, man. It is expensive. If you've never ran a Facebook ad, if you've never ran ads between Facebook and Instagram because they co-run, you know, you hit that selection, so it runs on both platforms. This shit ends up being like, it could be anywhere from 40 to 90 cents a click.
Oh, dude.
So if you get, you know, I've gotten 500 and 600 clicks on an ad over a month period for a show, and I'm forking over $600-$700 in ad rev to fucking Facebook.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, dude. And you know what? I love like Burke Kreischer, Tom Segura's of the world right now are just fucking dominating the space. And, you know, it's beautiful to see because you have access to people like you never had before. And it's tough for a slub like me, you know?
It is.
We'll work it out.
And I'll tell you, there's just never been. And also in stand up, there's the battle for the booking has never been harder either because so many people are jumping into the space that aren't even comedians. They can just get people to come out, which, hey, I used to hate on that a long, 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 long time ago before I understood had a real understanding for stand up and its business. And how this business works, and you got to get yours when you can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you don't wait for nobody. Get your money. If other comedians are upset that you are not a comedian, but you're booking a weekend somewhere, but it's fucking wall to wall sold out, guess what? And I can say this about myself. My bitterness was probably subconscious, and it wasn't the fact that he was getting a booking, not being a comedian. It was that not being a comedian and still going wall to wall when I've given my all, and it's hard to go wall. And I know how hard it is to go wall to wall.
Right.
Sold out. So that's also a humongous part of that. And so to this day, if I don't care what level of stand up you are, if you get a weekend at the comedy club, fucking sell it out, man, do your thing. Now they, you know, depending on what your reputation will be with what you perform with, whether people would ever come back to watch that again. Hey, at least you got paid for the weekend. And hopefully like you are like Ben Polizzi, or there's a few other guys that are comedians that are really that have a good social media following, but they don't lean on it to do. They actually put in the groundwork in the art form, and they're not just milking it because of social media numbers.
Right.
But you know, so I do hope that people who are getting weekends are actually putting in the work needed. You know, you can only work so hard to catch you before you're just all you, when you look, you're just catching up at this point. You know, you're trying to present a product that people will come back again to. So, right. You know, you can't hate on them, but clubs are more and more like no one's developing anybody any longer. That's out. Clubs used to, you know, go, you know, if you had an agent, then you would get weekends as a middle act, and they were honing you to become a headliner at these clubs. And then you start headlining slowly, and then they keep booking you and booking you and booking you, even though you're not selling, because they were trying to build a comedian. They don't do that anymore. There's no time for it.
That's a great point, dude, because that used to be a thing when you talk to. So old dogs, you know, they've been at it forever. Like they all had that era. Like when we talked to Stuart Huff and Tom Simmons, like it was a regular thing where, you know, a manager just grabbed hold of you. You're not a ticket seller yet. Anything. They just believed in your comedy. They liked you as an act, and they grabbed a hold of you. And then you would all the time, like just be going on your way to a gig, and you would get a call from your manager and say, "Hey, just so you know, Jim Carrey's people are going to be there tonight, and they want to look at you and Tom. And then you had that pressure, like, oh, but that would happen all the time.
Yeah.
They're always out to discover new people. And really now they're like, no, you go get yourself discovered.
Yeah.
And then we'll knock on your door.
Do your own legwork and then let us know. And even then, it's still hard as balls.
Yeah, it is. So, it really is.
So I respect your decision. I respect your decision that you've came to and this enough to make sure you let everybody know what your deal is. You know, and I hope your shows are, obviously your show's going to be wonderful, because no matter what, if it's 10 or 1,000, they're always awesome people.
Sure.
Obviously everybody listens to this podcast that ever comes out to the shows, they're always awesome. You know, I mean, it's always great to dap up someone that listens and they just, they have your hoodie on and they dap you up and they got the guns, it just makes you feel so fucking good. Like one person doing that makes you feel awesome.
It does, man. And, part of what I was thinking, too, is like, I've been kind of brainstorming on it, but it would be cool to focus a little more like on the Patreon side of things. Like, God, shout out real quick to everybody that's on this Patreon.
Our Patreon are absolute soldiers. They are unbelievably wonderful human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we said at one time, we were hoping to, we'd have an army of these people that like to enjoy us our things, but we ended up we have squad. A lot of people, but a real strong squad of buddies that people we already knew, on some level, but now they're our buddies. Like, we talk to them every week,
mm-hmm.
We do stuff with them, like always live. And it's, but they've stuck through for the most part, and the ones that are with us are so, they're just so badass. And I'm so thankful.
So hopefully they'll be the heart and soul of this maybe growing, because it would be cool to focus a little more on video content,
mm-hmm.
for those folks. And with, if I don't have to sit here and spend 2-3 hours a day on promotion of shows that, God love, just to get 40 or 50 people in the same room at a time, then maybe build stuff for them that's specific to only you guys. And, so take a look.
If you're not on, vamping. Yeah, Patreon, $5. It starts off at $5 a month.
Yeah.
Which obviously adds in a whole other podcast, no matter what, because we do coffee session every week. Every once in a while, we'll miss one. We try to make it up. Yeah, but you got a wild schedule with your Australia people, the documentary. But and again, the chase is of the dream. Like, this is definitely the most stable I've been as far as a family and relationship life this entire time, because my first 15 years, I never felt in the slightest amount did I ever feel any. And well, I also didn't meet anybody, luckily, that I would fight through this feeling. But I the feeling, the comfort or any kind of stability, feeling stable in any manner that I could think that I would want to ask someone to marry me, even, luckily, number one, I was never even found the person anyways. But number two, if I did, it would have probably been horrible, because I had $20 in my bank most of the time, and there was no way, I can't even go on dates, let alone be a stable boyfriend. I can be fun sometimes. I'm a fun Thursday, Saturday night date,
Right.
But
which was a great development thing for you, because you were always chasing, right? You were always just fucking, hey, I live for the next gig.
It's top priority.
Gig, boom, 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 boom. I travel. There's nothing more important than that next gig.
Yeah.
And then you got freaking an opportunity, just like I did with, now I was at Stable Life World though for 21 years.
Right? Yes.
That's the difference. And then boom, you got a great contract with two great entities. And then boom, you got a taste of, this is what it's like to be somewhat normal and be able to take care of shit. Mm-hmm. And then, so now you have that experience to draw from, and now you've settled in, man. You're settling in. You still got all your comedy shit or whatever, but it's all built around also being a stable person for others in your life.
Yeah. Which is wild, 'cause I've never been that dude ever, ever. But yeah, this is it's fun growth. But I'm really excited about your documentary. And I'm telling you, the work you put in, like, I know that 1041 a lot of times now, it's at the beginning, obviously, you went completely bonkers. Like, it was a fucking HBO podcast. And I, and you know, you really went balls to the wall. And I know that when you go balls to the wall with stuff, the product is unbelievable. Like, I remember having chills listening to see when you let me listen to those episodes early when you were working on, I was like, oh my God, this is fucking incredible. Season 1, 1041 is some of my favorite shit. It's definitely my favorite shit you've ever done.
Yeah. It's my favorite shit that I've ever done. I think, you know, of everything I've ever done, I think creatively, it's definitely the pinnacle of what I've done. I'm hoping that, you know, I was involved with Undetermined, which is coming out, mm-hmm. I think in December. So that's going to be, it's long form investigation, like actively trying to help solve an unsolved case. Like it's boots on the ground. Like it's, yes. People are really going to enjoy that. Although I'm just one part of that, but you know, hopefully shit like that. That's what I want to keep doing. You know what I mean? I want to get opportunities where I'm out helping people with these fucking unsolved cases, man. Like I can't, dude. You know me, I want to start punching things in the face when I see that someone got away with something that hurt, yes, somebody else.
Yeah.
You know,
and especially capital murder, yeah, especially when they start linking up and syncing up and shit. Like, you know, and I love your, the way that you really just can't get enough of when you've, the feeling people must have when you help them solve something or bring closure to something.
Just
knowing that person is just not out there floating around, you know, just gotten away with it, living it up at the beach. Because that's what you obviously think. If you've been, right, a victim and your person in your life has been taken from you by a murderer and they haven't been solved, mm-hmm, you think there's a person out there that absolutely ruined me, killed the person I love, and they're just wandering out of the beach. Now, that's just what we're going to think because that's what you think, right? Like, if we get away with murder, I'm going to the beach to fucking relax and just lay low, right?
Right.
Or just be happy, get away with it. We don't know though if, you know, if karma's a real thing. Did how many of the, I would like this statistic. Mm. How many people who got away with murder were accidentally somehow brutally killed by the universe some manner? A fucking tree branch falling, a train, a car accident. Like, that would be an awesome statistic.
It would, dude. Because you want to think that the universe takes care of its own business. Yes. Right. Like, yeah, all right, you're not going to get away with this shit. Like, you're going to somehow, you murdered 4 people and you got away with it as far as the law is concerned. I want to think that somehow you end up freaking contracting some painful, slow parasite eating disease.
Or like, you know, a big, humongous rock of a fucking gallstone.
Oh,
or that, you know what I mean?
Like, you're that guy in 27 hours who's out hiking. You're, yeah, like, oh, I'm a murderer. I got away with it. I'm going to go hiking in the desert. This is cool. And you slip and you get your arm trapped and you're stuck there. But except unlike him, you don't get away by cutting your own arm off. You just have to sit there and slowly
and die. Rot away.
That's what I want to happen to you. Does it always happen? Obviously not.
Obviously not. But, and again, this could be our own egos as humans, because the universe runs on such large scale, right? Like,
mm-hmm,
we're talking about millions of let's say miles, and we're over here worrying about the inches and the centimeters, talking, yeah, about, oh, you better get, you know, you better fucking get it for that centimeter you took from me or whatever, right? Like,
mm-hmm,
so we could feel that way. And honestly, we have no choice. Like, we have to, I think, in ourselves, otherwise, like, we lose purpose.
Right.
So no matter what, like, yes, every scale, there's a scale for everything. Mm-hmm. But it is true, like, and I, you know, and karma, I do hope that it does happen on at least a slightly larger percentage than normal, you know, for those fucks.
I know.
Because, you know, you sometimes you get, like, I get a little bit like, man, people are just getting away with shit, you know, because I think, like, where they randomly you'll find, like, some 90-year-old who was, like, a fucking Nazi that was the person hitting the go button in the gas chamber type shit, right? And they, mm-hmm, somehow escaped through South Africa up to fucking, you know, through Costa Rica, and now they're in Santa Monica and they're 90, right?
Right.
And they get caught. Like, obviously karma never got them, and they, right, were on another, yeah, level of absolute fucking, you know, moral compass, you know, being on the absolute other side of the moral compass.
Yeah. Like, imagine this, because this is like, in my documentary, not to give too much away, but I think there's at least one serial killer still out there, right? And should be free and alive and breathing and all this shit, right? So if I had a time machine, because I think about this all the time
now. Yeah.
Say we had a time machine. Someone comes to us and like, Todd, Sean, check this out. I have a time machine. And it really works. Yeah. What if you could? We could go back as a team throughout history, because we can do the research, see when the first freaking serial killers, all these different famous serial killers got started. And we could go back, and it's our job to stop them, a.k.a. kill them.
Yes.
Would you? We would be like, now what's ironic about it is that also turns us into serial killers.
Yeah. Right? Like, Dexter level, time traveling Dexter.
We're traveling back. We're a serial killer preying on serial killers. And we just go back to that moment in time. We're out before, you know. But would we at some point get caught? Eventually, would there be a federal agency created to investigate time traveling
vigilantes?
Yeah, vigilantes is a better way to put it, because we'd be serial killers, but more importantly, now, vigilantes.
Well, the question is now also, do you stop them? Now, this is basically Minority Report, I believe, is what we're getting into here. Time traveling cop, right? Minority Report, I believe. Yeah.
Remember, because it's deja vu with Denzel Washington. Remember,
yes, when he goes back to
stop that bombing.
So you know, do you stop them right the moment right before they commit the murder, so the people still live? But I think in Minority Report though, they already knew that the person was going to commit the crime, so they stopped them right sooner than they did it.
Yeah,
but if we're right in the moment trial. Now, are we killing off people who are about? Well, I guess we know they do the killing. So we're just killing them a split second before they kill the other people, right? Is that what would be our move?
I think so. But here's what would be great in our instance is we don't really have a government body regulating what we're doing and documenting and having their own little trial in the future, convicting these people and authorizing us. Like if a federal agency was running this, they would give us a time warrant. And the warrant, like a warrant of execution, a time warrant of execution, that we would be authorized to travel back and to execute that person before they get started.
Yeah. But
we would be on our own just doing this shit. So in effect, we're killing an innocent person because they haven't become a serial killer yet, unless we time it just right and catch them in the act right before the kill, which maybe we could accomplish that.
Which, guess what? And I think that our personal compass of morality would sway, because we are very under aware in our brains that the murder has taken place, because it has. We've just come back to. But then, you always, now here's the other fucked up part. And this I'm not the genius. This is standard operating procedure in time travel action, is the ripple effect of the people who now were supposed to die are alive, and the people who were alive are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so we know. And that's where we got into parallel universes.
And it could fuck up things, right? Because things, even though these are tragic things that happen to people, like that theoretically was their destiny, the universe's plan. So if we go changing shit, and now that person who was then to be killed lives and has a family and kids, and now we're introducing new characters into the world that weren't meant to be. How's that going to affect shit?
Yes, I think so. The meeting in the middle is that unfortunately there is a beast on Earth that creates life and death, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a food chain of sorts or whatever. I mean, obviously this doesn't fall in food chain because it's not necessary to survive, but do we have to meet in the middle, and do we have to kill the killers right after they make their kill?
Ooh, that's a good point, though. Like, does there have to be one sacrificial lamb?
Each, the people still, the people are still, unfortunately, have to perish, but we at least solve, everybody gets justice. It's a world of no, there are no unsolved murders. Mm-hmm. The murders still occur, so we don't fuck up the time ripple of that. Mm. But the killer dies right away. They just never know it.
Man, see, that's going to be the dilemma, right? Like, ooh. And that would probably be our federal violation at the time, because, or global violation, or probably be like a world investigative agency or world regulation agency created.
Yes.
And they would be like, okay, it's against the law to travel back in time now that we have time machines and to change the course of the future. Like, that's an actual violation, a world law.
Except for the black ops versions of time killers, where we can kill off and do. Once time travel happens, the world's over, I believe. Can you imagine? Look at greed in a capitalistic system that we have now. It's basically a fucking ruined. We're at the end of the Roman times, if you will. I think within the next 100 years, I don't even think that the world again, I don't think that it lasts personally. But I think we're going to blowing ourselves up, within the next 150 max. I mean, probably. Because at some point it's got to be one global operation. It's just too much now.
We're fucking shit up pretty good right now.
China with the missiles, Russia, China, the political spectrum. Now we got people in the country cheering on other country, anyways, I feel like we're just not capable. And the greed levels without knowing the future, if we imagine the greed levels of people when they get to go back and change it to where that they can make themselves billionaires.
Yeah. Because people wouldn't be like us, where we're just trying to save lives and get rid of evil. They would maybe
place a couple bets while I'm back there.
Maybe
throw 20 in a long shot. You know what I mean? A little fucking USA, USSR hockey in the 84. You know what I mean?
Well, the odds had to be pretty good there.
Big fucking deal.
For the American team.
Maybe lay down a couple of C notes there on a fucking on a live bet there when it was down 27-3 at the halftime there. The fucking Patriots come back to beat the Falcons.
But other than that,
a couple of friendly bets we might place. I mean, obviously, Back to the Future was fucking perfect example. Biff, the book, the guy gets the book. He goes back. He fucking calls all the game. The almanac.
Yep.
And that's just a small one. That's an easy. That's a ground level thought to do in time travel. The other levels are stocks, are fucking companies, are taking people and going and finding Tim, Tim Apple before he was Tim Apple, right? Like those moments, undercutting businessmen on their ideas before they don't even realize it because it's never going to materialize because they just got jacked.
Going in to get Apple stock at its very first public offering and getting, all that we could fucking buy and then just immediately back here to the present,
done.
Living like a gajillionaire.
Yeah. See, that point, I think, I just don't know if it'll ever be enough for some people. Because for me, I'd be good with that. Mm-hmm. Like, I just feel like the way I look at it now, the way people are now, that won't be enough for them. Like me, I go buy fucking, however much money I can get my hands on in order to go and back and buy, 10,000, whatever, 100,000 shares of Apple or Spotify or whatever the fuck, right? And then when I go to the future, I have the money. So that when I go back, I get the money. Now I'm taking my plane back in time or some shit. And then I'm going to go back in time with my money. And I'm going to go to like the coolest places that people ever bragged about. I personally wouldn't want to keep going back and taking the system for what it is by, rigging it to make myself future self richer.
And I would help other people. Like I would go back specifically to one particular day in 19, would have been 84 or 85. I'd have to hone it down to find out exactly when it was. But I remember there was a meeting that happened in the basement of our home. My parents had this guy come over and he was a stock guy. And he had a couple new stocks that he wanted. Uh-huh. He was an old friend of my dad's. Now he was in this business and he wanted to let them know, hey, maybe you should buy some of this stock. And the stock that they chose to purchase was Chi-Chi's and Ski World.
Okay.
Two businesses that didn't fare well over time. So the investment was, and then Ski World, which was these ski resorts that...
Wait, this happened to your family for real? Is this a movie plot?
It happened for real. But if I could go back armed with the knowledge that I have of the present, I could be like a little kid. I'm in middle school, but if I could tell my parents, listen, if you just wait a few more years, save that money, there's going to be a thing called a computer that gets developed. but you know, in this Apple stock, which maybe it's going to be called Macintosh. I don't remember what it was originally called. But if you buy that shit, then in about 20 years from now, you're going to be rich beyond your wildest dreams. Forget about Chi-Chi's. They ain't going to make it.
Chi-Chi's out.
With Don Pablo's. It was managed poorly. Whatever happened, real Mexican restaurants came at one point and just killed fake Mexican restaurants. And you know, that doesn't happen with Apple.
Mm-mm. It doesn't. I'll tell you what I would do. I'd go back to that fucking time when you guys were plotting to buy the new Morty's.
Yeah.
We had the old Morty's, and then we went in there. We went undercover over to fucking Don Pablo's. We lived behind it. We had an apartment right there behind it. And you guys were working out a deal to fucking take over, shut down Don Pablo's on 96th Street. No, wait, 82nd Street.
Yeah.
And then move into Morty's Comedy Club. And we were going to have, oh my God, what a.
We went in
and sat right in the middle, me, you, and Bowers.
And we fucking decided to go for it. If we just would have stayed put, it may still be going today.
In the old location.
What if we'd have stayed there on 96th Street in the strip mall? Would we still be going today versus putting all that money into it we did and try to get more clubs and then stretch ourselves too thin and then freaking in the crapper? What if we just would have stayed put? Of course, they wouldn't need me to be a part of it then.
Yeah, but no free ads. No free ads, though. Shout out to Panera for coming in and buying out the property, though, and making sure Todd had about as minimal. Did you end up with, how'd the debt situation? Did you get paid off there because of the debt? I mean, because them buying out the property?
Yeah, we were able to get back to damn near zero because thanks to the people that own the Grossmans, that own the Helium Comedy Club. They were nice enough to buy our intellectual property. And probably in an inflated rate just to help us take care of some bills. Just great people.
Helium Comedy Club is a business master. Those guys get it done. They are dialed in. And I'm telling you, bro, this guy, he ain't going to stop. I don't think he ain't scared of nobody.
No. And I tell you who else is coming on strong. Adam Norwest.
I got to talk to that guy. I just talked to somebody about him the other day. He bought a club. Someone told me when I was in Fort Wayne, obviously one of the other club guys told me that he fucking bought a club in Fort Wayne, the old Snickers.
Mm-hmm. They're buying clubs up all over the place, dude. Like, I think they have maybe freaking pushing 10 clubs now, maybe just under that. Like, growing. Like, you can tell. Just find a comedy club whose sign looks exactly like Tacoma Comedy Club.
Which is unbelievable. Great sign.
Yeah, and then that's their club.
And I've worked that club.
Yeah.
I worked both those clubs that he had out there, Tacoma and the other one. Mm-hmm. And they are unbelievable. The food's great. The fucking it's an improv. It's like one of the newer, like when an improv is new, it has a vibe like our stand up live vibe. Like it has that you know, that clean, modern, like perfect, just dialed in, shiny, nice, dialed in. No shortcuts. You know what I mean? Comedy clubs, look, it's an easy place to take shortcuts. You know, if you're not making a ton of dough, if you're not, you know, if you don't have investors that can help you make the place look unbelievable out the gate, if you're just scraping by, it's an easy place to fucking be a rusty, busted spot that you just use like a dirty whore as a stage to just get people through there, get people in, getting the drinks, getting the nachos, getting the fuck out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like a cattle drive.
Yeah. So he's doing it right. His clubs are unbelievable, man.
Unbelievable. Get the butter bacon jalapeno burger at the fucking Tacoma Comedy Club.
Oh,
it's the best sandwich Comedy Club history.
Gotta hit him up, bro. Yeah, that place is unbelievable. I was headlining one of them, and then Tom Green took my week, so I ended up just featuring. I got the feature for Tom Green and hang out with him all weekend, and that was really awesome to get to know him.
Isn't he cool?
He is just so damn cool,
great
bro.
Dude to hang out with, man.
Talk about a guy who's been jacked of his intellectual property and just kept it moving.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. I don't want to get into this because this is kind of a soapbox for me. But Jackass, obviously, they grew off of what they did, but they absolutely fucking hacked the shit out of Tom Green. Everything they did in the beginning was nothing but remastered Tom Green shit.
I mean, the guy basically created podcasts. He had the Tom Green Show.
Yeah, that from his fucking house, like Wayne's World type shit.
Yes, and Joe Rogan does it and fucking falls in love with it. And Joe didn't jack it. I mean, it obviously spawned an idea that a lot of juggernauts went on to freaking get very successful at. And he was the first one to have the idea, wouldn't it be cool just to fucking talk to people in my house?
Yeah.
Or a setting that looked like his house, wherever it was. But I mean, that guy to me, he's one of the, he deserves a solid place in comedy history.
He sure does.
And podcasting.
And even today, like when I middled for him in like 2016 or whatever that was, his act, I loved it.
I did too.
And I think some people try to some people are bagging on it. And I was like, well, I mean, of course, there's always going to be that people, mm-hmm. you know, again, no matter what, half the people hate The Rock. Like, people hate The Rock. Why do you hate The Rock?
Right.
Like, right. I didn't know that people used to hate Ellen DeGeneres, and I didn't get it. Now I know why. But before, I didn't get it. I'm like, how do you hate this woman? She's a fucking angel, right? She's giving away everybody gets shit. Right. I didn't know then what I know now. And now I get it. But not everybody is that, the Ellen case, right?
Right.
Like, but Tom Green, like, I loved his material. I really think
he's a great stand-up comedian. He's always working on it, always evolving, you know, freshening things up. And dude, it's just an enjoyable fucking hour. And the dude has to deal with so many maniacal fans during his set of just yelling out quotes from Freddie Got Fingered.
he tell him too, yell out your shit at the end, guys.
Yeah.
Yell it out end.
I'll do the whole montage of the quotes at the end for you. Just hold on. But he has to do that like every 3 or 4 minutes in his act.
But that's also, you know, that's a double-edged sword of being absolutely an unbelievable content creator, right?
Right.
Like, somebody is just, your shit is, it's the same with like Dave Chappelle or fucking Jim Brewer. You know what I mean? Like these guys where they like, they have these characters, or they have these shows that just absolutely transcend into people, and they relate so hard and they can't get enough that they are obviously seeking them out to see the show, and they can't believe that they're in front of them. The guy that does that thing on their TV that they laugh and just love and connect to so much that they got to fucking yell it out, bro. And
I want to give a quick shout out to people, the Jerry Seinfelds and the Dave Chappelles of the world, even the Joe Rogans. Like, when you become so successful through a TV show that you created or a podcast that you create, anything,
a movie
you created, and you become rich beyond your wildest dreams, powerful within the industry, but then still maintain that highest level of stand-up that's another level, a whole nother level. Like B. Brian Regan, all these great stand-ups, Gary Goldman, you know, best in the business. But sometimes, well, most of the time, I think it happens. Like when you get that success in that other media form, you never get back to that level of greatness, nor do you have the desire, but they do. And man,
I think it's like painters, right? Like some guys, they're never happy with that one thing they did, no matter how great it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some guys are happy with with the one off.
Yeah.
And you know, it also depends, like, what are you doing here? Like, and this is any career, I think, that where you can get a one-off payday if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you a George Carlin type, or, you know, are you a fucking, I don't know, whoever else was awesome and isn't anymore, or isn't producing like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But some people just they're going to perform forever. Paul Rodriguez had a mild heart attack or something. He had some surgeries, not even 2 years ago. Dude's out putting in works. Like, you can't stop the man. And guess what? Paul Rodriguez is still funny as fuck.
Yeah.
I ran the 80s, produced, wrote, directed, produced his own movies, you know, born in East LA, and on top of the world, did a special from jail at FRH, from San Quentin or something, right? On HBO, top of the world, the internet hits, forget it.
So much respect for dudes like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
And ladies, I shouldn't say it's not a, you know,
guys and girls
thing. Yeah. It's not a,
but again, thing. And I don't mean like I just meant like, obviously everybody has, they hit a peak and then there's always a peak to a career.
Right.
But it didn't matter to him. Like, he just constantly kept it moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I was open for him in 2018. Like, shit. Like, Paul Rodriguez is a fucking soldier, man. I love it. I got to talk you into it and find time, and just get him to agree to it. But for us to go there for like 4 days and just sit there, meet him at noon, get him on a microphone, and just talk for 3 hours every day. and just edit it up, because his stories are some of the most incredible. It's like a time lapse into the comedy world from the late 70s on, and it's incredible, especially the 80s.
I couldn't imagine. I mean, that would be one of the highlights of my life, I think.
Yeah. And some of his other stories too, like people rolling up, like important persons rolling up to come see the show at the Comedy Store or whatever, and he's standing out front and they mm-hmm. think he's valet. And then they don't know that he's the fucking headliner. You know, they're like, mm-hmm. he told me someone threw him a keys one time. And I parked it. I took the car around and even parked it. And he fucking went in and destroyed. And he said a guy came up to him afterwards feeling like the biggest dumb fuck on the planet.
Really?
Because he threw Paul Rodriguez a fucking keys. His car. So I'm going to park this. You know, I was in the 80s. You know, people did that type of shit back then.
Hell yeah.
You know, I mean, they do it now. But, you know, no one ever just tosses keys to a random just because right. it's a Mexican dude standing there. Park my car there, Jose. And just fucking pop the keys over. Like, what kind of shit? On a trust level. Like, I didn't even have a vest on. But I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things, right? And it all kind of goes back to what you're experiencing right now, and your passion and where it lies, and what you want what you feel best. Because you're still in a position of a lot of your work is going unpaid at the moment as right. you build on something that you completely 100% believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So. If it's something that you obviously, you know, when you're going to the true crime and the documentary and the true crime, you know, space,
right?
Then that's where the passion is. The passion is all. I feel like the passion always comes as passion shows itself by when you do something that you're not making money on, or that you feel you will make money on.
Right.
I mean, that's what passion is.
I remember. I mean, you remember it too, like the in Pat's instance. The dude was, I'm not saying he ran himself like I have to where there's not a penny in your bank account. I mean, he had money, but dude, he put a shit ton of his own money and resources into what he wanted to do. Like, yeah, outside,
he didn't wait for nobody.
Barstool not funding. He did the build out on that building himself.
I don't even know if he even got paid back on that shit ever. He was supposed to do the 50-50 split on that building.
Yeah,
I know he fronted it all. I bet you never even got that shit back, homie. No. And you know what? He didn't even give a fuck when he left.
No. His mindset always was, I'll spend every last fucking dime I got because I believe this is going to happen. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But in my heart, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And he just tried to take some sense of that on our level and like, fucking, okay. This is if I feel this passionately about it, then fucking, you know what? You go balls to the wall and hopefully it pays off at some level.
And his shit was he was so passionate about it with that. He was such an animal of throwing in his own recent money to make sure that his plan will start to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look what we did. Like, we couldn't believe in it anymore. Like, we were right. Obviously, how much we believed in it. We like mm-hmm. I stopped doing stand up on the road. I was like, I'm done, because I knew we had to be there with them, or else you were out. If you weren't there, you were out. You were out.
Yeah.
So I mean,
this was a fucking train. It's taken off. Get on.
We wanted to be on.
By. Yeah.
Pat, I was waiting for the call. Like, we'd be buddies, and I was waiting. I stopped doing stand up, and I did social media management for a fucking year,
mm-hmm.
Just in order to make sure that I didn't miss the boat.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, I stopped doing dates. I only did shows in town, and then I got a few spots to let me manage your social media, and then I did my shows here and there. But otherwise, I just sat and waited because I was like, no, this guy, I mean, I saw how, you know, we both saw how much that dude was so passionate about what he wanted to do. I mean, look, we sat around with him. What? We would bring our gear to his house. Mm-hmm. We were starting an app. We were working on names for the app. You guys did a lot more with that. Like, we were looking at space. There was so many different things. We're doing Bob and Tom. Doing our pod, you know, for a while it was just you, me, and him. After Bauer stopped, it was just you, me, and him. And before football season started, he really couldn't do it anymore. But we were doing a podcast every Tuesday, the early ass time.
Right.
And then, well, you know, when we were going into Bob and Tom to record it on their off hours
mm-hmm.
at night. And I just knew, I was like, I got to be here. This is a fucking electric situation. This guy's unbelievable. And the level of comfort and like, creative, how creative I felt around him too was also unbelievable.
Yeah, when you watch somebody believe in themselves that to that level and then back their own dream to that level.
With like their money, financially, yeah, with their own money.
I mean, it changes you. It changes you if you're a person who's a dream chaser yourself. Like you want to be able to emulate it, but then beyond that, it's just like it makes you less afraid, I guess. Like, man, if you really believe in yourself and you think you've got what it takes to succeed in that realm, you can't be afraid. You gotta fucking, you know, open yourself up naked to it.
And you know, and also the age that we were when we got to experience that, you know, his transition from football into what it is now. Mm-hmm. I feel like we even got a better appreciation for it, and we were even more focused because we were at a certain age where you can also know where people are talking about a pipe dream, but then because of like, and listen, I don't mean it's no disrespect to anybody else chasing their dream, but a lot of times people's dreams are much larger than what they can ever like, just the small parts to put together to get there, right?
Yeah, true.
So, you know, it's like, and then you see a guy like him, you're like, oh my God, like this guy is a fucking rocket ship. And the best part was like, I just want to do whatever I could to help. Like, what can I do?
Yes.
Like me and you were both like, well, he's good at this. I'm good at this.
Right.
We're both good at this. We can do this. Here's some ideas. Like we have ideas. We got good ideas. We've been around the block. This is what he does. This is what I can do. And then Pat was just like, okay, we'll do this. We can do that. I like what you're saying there. I like what you got there. And he was just taking like all of us together. And we just came together and we just went bonkers. But the best part was just like how much of like, it just felt like I actually got a buddy. I got like, we have like another real guy like us, like a really good friend. Like we are.
I was so curious about him for so long. Like even before the real friendship, like what makes a dude who is the best at what he does, killing it in the NFL, the biggest fucking athletic stage you could ever hope to be part of, and be the best punter in the fucking league, could have been one of the best field goal kickers, if not the best field goal kicker, if you wanted to be. But then you're like, but then also like totally wants to stop doing that and go do something.
Couldn't stand it actually.
Yeah. Like he would rather go do this thing. So now he's going to take every bit of the focus and attention and effort that it took to get there in the NFL to fucking comedy and sports broadcasting. And now the WWE and all that. God damn it.
So but we knew it, man. I know everybody else probably in his world knew it before that too, but we were so blessed like to be like you know we were lucky. I'll say it's a luck thing, right?
Yeah,
no, totally. I don't know if it's a blessing. It's a luck thing to be able to witness, like having a ticket to a show, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have been around so much of the entertainment world. I lived in LA for 15 years, and I've never, I mean, outside of Gabriel Iglesias, you know what I mean? Have I met somebody with like that just woke up ready to fucking spit fire and rock and roll and become and like hate something that was incredible. Like he hated football. And we were just like, how? But the way he told us and gave us like this behind the curtain vision, also incredible. And it was just like such a mind. It was almost a mind fuck in my way, because it came through so fast, like this whirlwind from the night he saw us perform, and he loved my joke, and he told me how much he offered me that job and to do this open for him for way too much money. And then we both are in on it, and now we're doing this, and we're at Morty's, and we're just fucking doing pop-up shows, and he's killing. Like, how is he killing? He's only done 3 sets.
And fucking like he's been doing it for 30 years.
It's bro. And it was an incredible existence to like move up through that point. Like what the luck of how it all unfolded from you guys even getting me to move to Indiana from California, and where I had to be in my life in order for it to come. And then for me to be the connecting dot with like this thing, and then we go and it just explodes. I mean, it's still like it's
all kismet, dude.
And it doesn't even make sense.
Him being the most overpaying fucking headliner for his support acts, like fucking paying us to do 10 minute sets, like money
20
that
minutes
we've never seen before. Like
absolutely
like top level headliners make doing theater shows.
Yeah. And I was just like, I don't know. Well, he wasn't paying us that much, but I mean, top level headliner theater. That's fucking five, six, high fives, early sixes.
But
it was humongous. Yeah, it was humongous amounts of money. I'll give you $5,000 if you want to open for me. I'm like, that's too much, man. I mean, yeah. I felt bad. Like, I was like, that's just not how it works.
Nope, take it. I did really well in the show. You guys were great.
Didn't give a fuck.
Okay. But, man.
It was wild. And it was just so much fun. Like, the way he was a sponge, too. Like, whatever any of the ideas that I brought from, like, my years of Gabriel Iglesias touring, and some of the fun things he would do, you know, like the pop-up shows and things like that, right? Or, I mean, and then with you, the way it was just, man, I'll tell you what, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. Moving all into that building, all the way up to that point, which was a while after. I mean, it was almost 2 years, like, well, I don't know how long, actually, from like the time we were doing it in his like when we had Connor Daly over at his basement of around his poker table, around Pat's poker table in his basement.
Yes.
Doing that fucking we lugged your gear over there. We brought all your fucking gear. We set up shop. And it's just awesome, man. And now looking at it, you're just like, Jesus Christ. And I called him Neo. Cause I was like, this guy is fucking Neo from the Matrix. He's the one. Like, this is the guy. He's the one. I've been around a million people. This guy is the one. And it's no one's, it ain't stopping here, bro.
And he wears number one, ironically. So it all fit.
We never really talked about that whole part. Like, yeah, we've always discussed like some of the outer details, but like we've never really discussed the transition that, because me and you were right there at the beginning of his transition and we were living together and he would just come over to our house. Like that one time, you've told the story before, you came in and he was just hanging out on our couch and you're like, hey, what's up, Pat McAfee? And you had been a fan for so many years.
Yeah.
That was the one thing I didn't get that, but it might've been good that you got out of our running indie was, you were a longtime fan of Pat and Chris Lytle.
Yeah. And then you get to be friends with both.
You got to be. Jesus. Yeah. And I did know, obviously I knew Chris Lytle because he was also my go-to guy when we were playing UFC on the bus.
Oh, nice.
So that was, you know, that part was also, though, I almost feel like it was kind of good because it made him a regular guy to me and not like a guy that I'm hanging out with so-and-so.
Sure.
Because I didn't pay attention to football and I sure wouldn't have known the punters.
Yeah.
If I didn't know the quarterbacks or if I didn't, you know, anybody else, because I just wasn't into football, you know, really.
Right.
So, I mean, I love football. I've always loved it. And I love watching it, but I'm saying keeping up with it, rolling around with it. When I was in that point of comedy and traveling and no cable and shit like that, then there was no football
on your roster knowledge.
Yeah. I wasn't at sports bars. I didn't even go to bars. Like I try to tell my lady that she doesn't really believe me because because I didn't. We go to a bar here and there, but I didn't have money ever to go to bars in California ever. Right. Like, yeah, during the years with Gabriel, I had extra money.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, otherwise, like before that, going to a bar, are you crazy?
Right.
Like, we don't go to bars on the weekend. You go to shows and you drink for free, hopefully.
Yeah.
Or you drink for a dollar or two, because at the improv, it's like you get $2 drinks or something. Right. So like, I try to tell my lady, like, because in Indy, I became a different person, right? Like, you're hanging out with the fucking bar owners. You're hanging, like, Pat introduced us to everybody that was fucking awesome in the town.
Right.
So we automatically got street cred. We were just kicking it, drinking for free, or, you know, somebody was always handing you a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, or just going to bars in general. Like, I was never a bar guy. I was at shows, and I didn't have the money to go if I didn't have a show.
That's a weird phenomenon, but you're right. I never really thought about it. Like, when you came here, I mean, you came from a whole culture that was just completely, completely different. I was only a sports bar guy because growing up here, I had a regular job. So I did have, you know, enough money, not that I was rich being a cop, but I had enough money to
get
wings and enough beers to black out.
Yeah, of course. Like me taking a buddy to lunch or dinner just did not happen, bro.
Right.
We didn't even eat regular. Like we only made it at the house, or we had basically fast food or something in the $10 range. Like I was riding around in a fucking car. The repo man was looking for.
Right.
There's no fucking going to bars, a party. It's just a fucking bonkers. But now I'm like, man, I should go back to that way of living.
Dude, it was so good to see too. Like, you just sacrificed, and people just need to know this. I'm going to get emotional for a second, but you fucking sacrificed so much for so long And then when you got paid, I remember like you fucking wanted to take care of everybody. You know what I mean? Like you, that was your first move. It wasn't like, okay, I need to put this back for a rainy day or get, you know, now like the way you think now where you're like a smart investor and all that. When you got paid, you were like, I'm going to fucking take care of everybody. Like I owe so many rounds of drinks and so many dinners. And like you played like 2 years of catch up on your homies. You know what I mean? You did. Like you funded a party for like 2 years.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, you don't know. Like it feels incredible. Like it felt incredible. It had to. To like, no. You know, like handing them the drinks, handing them a shot, handing them.
Right.
Like, oh man, if it just, because, you know, for so long, like you want to go hang out, but people force you, they want to hang out with you, your friends. Like, if they're going to, sure. You know, and you don't want to be a bird. You don't want to be that dude. Mm-hmm. You know, like
when you're such a good dude that people want you there, even though you don't have money to pick up tabs, like which you were popular. Everybody wanted you to go. You're like, dude, I got the money for that right now. I got, you know, until I get this next gig. No. Come anyway. They wanted you there. So like, dude, I got smoky for a second thinking about it, but I can remember you fucking like, as soon as you got paid, like, no, it's payback time. Everybody come with me and let's fucking hang out. I got tonight. Like what? That had to feel so
God
fucking it's- good.
Yeah, I feel like you cross a bridge, you know, it's like, oh, man. Yeah. No, whenever he had me sign that contract, I saw the picture of my favorites on my phone of my first contract for that much money. I was just like, I started crying in his office.
Yeah.
And then I went over and I was like, man, I can't just fucking shake your hand, man. And I fucking went on his desk and I gave him a hug and I gave him a biggest hug, man. And I was like, I'm so fucking grateful, man. Like this kind of money is absolutely, this is like 10 years of money, like,
yeah,
that you didn't give me for one time. And it was I mean, fucking repo men, no cars, buses,
yeah,
you know, so just so much shit and such little paying action. You know, I had good time during Gabriel years, but still, even then, like, it wasn't like it wasn't a, sure it wasn't $100,000 a year, you know, right, to start off. And you know, because just a year prior, like, I was still gigging up, trying my ass, fucking driving to Michigan for $500 on a gig I know I didn't want to fucking do because it didn't pay enough, but I had a Prius so I can do it.
Right.
I needed to get the $800 or the $500.
Yeah.
So for rent. So it was like that's how close of a gap. Like I didn't work up to the $100,000. Like I was the most money I ever had for years and years was because the money he gave me for the gigs that he overpaid us.
Right.
So, and then you pay your bills for a few months off that. And, you know, and then with, you know, and then he said that, bro, and I just fucking, yeah, that office, he gave me he had a pen, he had a special pen. He had this really awesome, different, like brand new pen. He grabbed it, took the lid off, and he's like, here you go, buddy. This is for you. Mm-hmm. And he handed it over, and I fucking had a contract, and he put the pen down all like dope.
Yeah.
You know, and I just fucking, he goes, right there is what you'll be making. This is what get. And I was like, I mean, I almost didn't know what to do. It was like 20 years of fucking banging the streets. And I finally got a fuck something, you know?
Right. I remember when he told me he was going to break you off, man. I was like, holy shit, this is a big moment, dude. Like, and it really didn't hit as much as now when I look back at it. But I remember it being a fucking huge moment. I'm like, dude, this is fucking, like, how many times do you get to experience something that's life-changing?
No, especially after that many years of being a blue-collar, just scraping by motherfucker, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. And I just was like, oh, my God. And I remember I ran over his fucking, and I didn't know if, like, you know, we always dap it up and shit, you know, but I just couldn't. I was like, man, I can't just, you know, to shake my hand. I'm like, I can't just shake your hand, man. And right. I fucking ran around his desk and I gave him the biggest fucking hug I think I've ever given a male because I didn't grow up with a dad. I mean, outside of my grandpa, you know,
right.
My uncle or my stepdad, you know, like even then, like this was, this man was single-handedly just turned my shit upside down. Like, oh, completely took, like, he just literally, and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, dude, I remember, and I came from a different place. Like, I had a regular job and stuff, but, you know, went to that Pacers game, and he pulled me up there by, you know, to the side and said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. You want to sign up? You want to retire? I'm going to retire. Let's make this happen. You know, it's like, whoa, what the fuck, dude? Like, this is, you know, when you're numb, something you're like numb, mm-hmm. you're like, this isn't real. Like,
yeah. Someone's going to take this away. This
I'm going to wake up. Something's going to change. You know, something's going to happen before then. Mm-hmm. Like, this can't happen.
Yeah.
But you know, it did. And, you know, fuck, let's just end it on that, dude.
Yeah.
McAfee, sorry about all the times we pissed you off for mm-hmm. being undeserving in the moment, for being animals that we were at times. You're the best, and fucking anything that happens for here is because of that. So always much love.
Love you, buddy.
Love you, brother.